and welcome.
I'm experiencing high G forces. I'm gonna
high G in your mouth in a second here.
We're pushing the button after the blast off. I'm confused now.
All right. Woo! Welcome to Co-opticast episode 120. My name is Locke Vincent. I am joined by three people who don't know how to use the Google Hangout buttons on the left-hand side of this screen. Anyways, we've got a great show for you. To my left, his name's Mike. He's in Portland. Mike, what's up?
It's raining.
It's raining. You saw the Lego movie. Everything is going well.
As well as can be, yes.
Excellent. He is in his loungewear. That is not a Snuggie, ladies and gentlemen, if you're watching live or on video.
I swear it is. Like, the first time I saw it.
It's a hoodie.
That's a straight-up zipped-up
hoodie. I have my straight-up Portland hipster shirt on underneath. Hiding my shame.
Over across the table from him is a man who was recently engaged and invited me to his wedding, which was the biggest mistake of his life. This is Jason Love. Jason, how are you?
Oh, Canada.
Oh, Canada is right. I'm coming.
That's all I have to say. Now I'm really afraid.
Crashing the wedding, high on maple syrup sugar, and you have no idea what it looks like to be riding in on a moose. Anyways, Jason, what's going on? What's going on in your life? How's your week?
Pretty good. Enjoying a three-day weekend. Made another homebrew batch over the weekend.
So. Now, are you talking about nerd, like, homebrew software, or are you talking about beer that adults drink?
Can it be both?
If you made a software that makes a program something that could make beer, that would be, you would be
a
rich man.
It just didn't work well when I put it in the beer. That just seemed to go horribly wrong.
Don't do
that. No, yeah. Making another batch of beer here.
And what was that? Was that a Tennessee stout?
It is a amber ale that has Earl Grey tea steeped in it for just a few minutes to lend it a little bit of flavor, and we'll see how it turns out.
You're going to name that after Picard, right?
I'm trying to figure out some names for it now, yeah. I mean, I got Jean-Luc Picale. I have Make It So Amber.
There you go.
And I also have There Are Four Lights Ale.
Okay.
Yeah, for the inside track.
What about
how about Tea Earl Grey Brewed?
Oh, there we go. There we go.
You got to work engage in there somewhere. And finally, our fearless leader, Nick Paleo, what's going on over on the East Coast?
Snow, and more snow.
That means you get to code in Unity, right?
Yeah.
Just stay inside.
I've been doing some coding. I've been doing some shoveling.
And coding?
Yeah.
Dumping.
Yeah.
Now, before we continue, someone asked me if I had to shovel my roof in case it was going to cave in. That thought never crossed my mind, and it snows. I've been in a snowy country for 30 years now, and is that a thing? Do, like, roofs cave in?
I had to shovel my roof over my sunroom.
Okay.
Just this past storm, the drifts against it were basically up to the first pane of the window, so you're about like a 4 foot drift was on it. So I basically opened the window, started knocking the snow out, had 1 foot in the house and 1 foot on the roof, and I was shoveling crap off of it. So
I lived
in a place with a high degree of snowfall before, and people cleared their roofs off pretty often.
Okay, all right. So Nick, you're going to be hosting for the next hour. I'm going to go shovel my roof. This was brought to my attention, and I have not done that. We've got a good show. We've got a lot of games to talk about. We've got a bunch of news, lots of new trailers, stuff to get excited about for this year. And then who knows? We might even have a voicemail. I don't know. We could get crazy.
Whoa. We've had that voicemail number for what, 3 years now, and we've never had a damn voicemail?
I think we've had one before. I think one in 120
but we
episodes.
Put it on the show.
let's dive right in. What do you guys want to talk about first? Let's talk about Bravely Default, because that's a weird game that I don't know anything about other than you guys.
It's an amazing game.
You guys played a demo for, and you're like, oh, my stuff transfers over, and then there's naked children, and something happened, and then I don't know.
I don't know about naked children.
I must have missed that pre-order bonus.
There's some sort of No, there's some sort of censorship thing going on because...
Oh, there was... So the character designs, they took like some skirts that were a little short in Japan and made them longer for the U.S.
Nice.
That's it.
Okay. So tell me, Mike...
Not quite child pornography.
I guess. Same thing, right?
I'll tell you exactly what Bravely Default
is. Give me the goods here. I want, just like, paint me a word picture, butter me up, because I'm coming off the Pokemon high, and I need something
Let me tell you exactly what Bravely Default is.
Okay.
It is Final Fantasy VII, if the PlayStation never existed.
Oh, interesting.
It is basically, if you liked the old Super Nintendo-style Final Fantasies with the job system, so like, you know, Final Fantasy III, Final Fantasy V... it's one of those games, except modern and polygonal, and there's a story about four elemental crystals being corrupted and the world being doomed, and it's awesome.
I love it. There's more going on than you realize.
Oh yeah, there's always more going on. But you know, there's 30 jobs in a game, Jason?
Yeah.
You know, so 30 different character classes, so your characters have their own level, but they can also level up the jobs, and then once you've leveled a job up, you can take any of the abilities out of the job and assign it to your character in obviously a limited number of slots, but you can start making, you know, pirate dragoons that cast elemental spells on their weapons. And Locke, do you have a question?
Does this system get overwhelming with all of the jobs and all of the ways you can combine? It seems like you could min-max to an extent, which is okay in these types of
games. You can have a main job.
Right.
Each character can have a main job and a sub-job. And the main job you have access to everything that job gives you.
Right.
There's a trait that you'll get that you don't get if you equip it as a sub-job. And so there's your job, sub-job, and then you have, I think, up to 4 or 5 ability slots in the end. And you can just... So you're limited in what you can use, and it becomes pretty obvious. Like, my favorite combo right now is I have a red mage who is... You know, they learn both white and black magic, but I also had them level up the time mage. So they have white magic, black magic, and time... But the white mage is also combat focused, so they can melee. So they have access to all the melee stuff as well. And I took I focused them on using shields and having high avoidance because the red mage gets like counterattacks and all kinds of cool stuff if they dodge or block an attack. So it's you know that's pretty fun. And I have a sword or a spell fencer who is, you know, basically I can cast lightning on my weapon and smack you around with it. And I combined that with the Valkyrie class, so they have like the jump command.
Okay.
And they can do a lot of like really focused high damage attacks and exploit elemental weaknesses, and it's pretty awesome.
To answer your question, Locke, no, it doesn't get too overwhelming because you're exposed to each one of these jobs like over time, so you get enough time to learn
cool.
each one of the jobs before you get more.
No, that sounds rad. I mean, for the battle system, is it a straight up JRPG battle system, or is it a tactical map?
So it's a turn-based JRPG, but the interesting thing and the name of the game comes from the battle system.
Right, where you can do brave or default shit, right?
Yeah, so basically you can bank... So default is like your standard like Final Fantasy style block. So I don't want to act this turn, I hit defend. And in Bravely Default, if you do that, you get a brave point, which is basically an action point. And you expend... By triggering the brave, you get to take an additional action each turn. So you can take up to 4 actions. You can take up to 4 turns in a single round per character. So if I want to whack you 4 times with a sword, I can do that. And you can go negative in your action points. So
and that's a cowardly default.
If I think I can beat you in one round, I can have all of my characters take 4 turns right up front. And then there's no penalty for it, but if I do that against a boss that you most likely can't beat in one turn, then the boss gets basically three straight turns against me without giving me the ability to counterattack or defend. So there's kind of this ebb and flow of banking turns and expending turns, or going into a turn deficit to try and, you know, take advantage of situations as they present themselves.
Cool. So why is this game working for you?
Because it is a JRPG without its head up its ass. And it's true. Like,
I understand that.
Like, you play, like, JRPGs from the Super Nintendo era and even some of the early PlayStation stuff, and they're still kind of like, let's just go save the world, guys. And then, you know, Final Fantasy VII hit and everything had to be about metaphysical bullshit and giant cutscenes. And there's really not very much of that in Bravely Default. And, you know, you can do stuff like... they have some really interesting things, like you can adjust the random encounter rate. So you can say, I don't want any random encounters at all.
Nice. Just
turn the fucking combat off. I'm only going to fight bosses. And obviously you can screw yourself by doing that, but you can lower it, turn it off, raise it, or double it. So if you have to grind for any reason, you can just double the encounter rate. And then there's also 4 combat speeds, so you can increase the combat speed so it goes by 4 times faster than normal. So you just walk around in a circle, hit auto battle, and auto attack everything to death when you're over leveled and you're just trying to get job points or something. And all the cutscenes are skippable. You know, it's a game that lets you, it's a JRPG that lets you basically do whatever the hell you want with it, and that's usually pretty rare.
More importantly, I think it's a JRPG that actually treats the audience like, okay, we know that, you know, this has gotten kind of ridiculous, so you're in control of it. I mean, with the random encounters, like Mike said, being able to skip cutscenes, if you're just like, yeah, let me keep going with this, I just want to keep playing, you're not, like, forced to sit there. Like, you don't have to sit through this cutscene. You can, you know, make it... You can actually hit autoplay on it, right? So you can just tell it, yeah, just go through whatever, I'm going to go put this next to me while I sit on the toilet. I mean, like, you can just let it play through, and you don't have to sit there and, you know,
advance
be bogged
the text
down.
Or anything.
Yeah. I kind of like it because the initially it was like, oh, this is great, this is just, you know, back to Super Nintendo days, and as the games progress and it does do a good job of kind of introducing you to the different character classes, and initially I kind of felt like all the boss fights were just wait, save up all, you know, default until you're at the maximum number of, you know, brave points, and then spend them all so you don't go too far into the negative, and just rinse and repeat. And as time goes on and the bosses actually develop different things that mess that up, you're forced to really balance that. Like, it becomes a really interesting system that you have to kind of like, okay, this guy's going to charge up while these other ones are playing support. And yeah, they're going to kind of go into negative, but that's in order to benefit this other thing that's going to happen. So it's...
So you'll actually, to go off what he said, like, there's some bosses that, like, they'll only attack you after they've stocked up 4 actions.
Right.
So you can actually count the number of turns they've taken and say, okay, every 3 turns I need everybody to start defending, or I'll leave a guy exposed during that because he has good counterattack abilities. And, you know, there's items that let you, like, focus, like, basically let you taunt like an MMO.
Okay.
So you can, you know, basically build up hate against something. And there's a lot of stuff going on if you want to mess around with it.
Nice.
It's oddly, it has kind of this weird asynchronous co-op aspect that Jason might
tell me about.
Want to talk about.
Tell me about this.
So you get to, as you kind of level up your characters and everything, you can send a move out. So, like, they have special moves that you can do with each one of the different weapon types, and they have different limit breaks, if you will, you know, from like Final Fantasy VII, for how you charge those up. And what you can do then is you can use it in combat, but you can also at the same time send it out so that it gets shared with all your friends. So all your friends then can summon you into their battle and have you use that move against whatever they're fighting against.
Yeah, once every 24 hours or so, you can use a move from a friend.
I like that. You know, you can, like, if you have a friend who's, like, played, you know, a lot of this, and they've got, like, a super powerful move. You can summon them, you know, because you're having a tough time with this boss as, like, a last-ditch thing. You know, do a bunch of damage to the boss and, you know, kind of help you out. Those moves also, like, they have special parts that you can research in your town that you build up that give you benefits, like, you know, they give you additional turns to use. They give you, you know, like, brave points, or they heal you or restore all your mana or something like that.
And the funny thing about them is it plays out like a summon animation in a Final Fantasy game.
Yeah.
But the actual summoner class, you don't get any, like, summon cutscenes.
Awesome.
When you do the summons, or if you do, I have not seen it.
Awesome.
Also, one of the summons is a gigantic shadow airplane.
Perfect. Yeah.
What's it called?
The summons are really interesting. They have a very modern feel. Like, there's an airplane, there's a train.
There's a giant Earth scorpion.
Yeah.
Nice. That sounds super good and a must play on the 3DS. Because, yeah, like I said, I'm coming off of Pokemon here, and I'm ready to dive right into something. And this sounds pretty damn cool. So
it also has a really beautiful collector's edition.
That's cute. That's cute.
Also, you don't have to draw a single map, Locke. So,
well,
that should sell you right
there. I'm okay with drawing. I just think. I mean, where's the cartographer class? Like, come on.
There is a merchant class. They're literally,
yeah.
Instead of combat, they're like, I want to start selling shit to the enemy.
Why? Yep. Why wouldn't you want to make bank on some of this? War makes money, man. So.
Well, that literally is how it goes. Like, you can buy out the enemy, or, you know, it's messed up. Like, you can say, here, take my healing items, and you charge the enemy double what you could sell it for in a store.
Mm-hmm.
You gain more money while you have a merchant in your party. It's there's all kinds of weird stuff going on, but it's fun.
That's cool. I wanna talk to Nick for a second here. Nick, what are you doing with XCOM?
I fired up the expansion pack finally, and digging into that. So
yeah, give me a little taste. What are you feeling?
Well, basically what they did is they put this meld element in it. Basically every map now has collectible meld. And what that is it's a resource which you can create special things, like you can create hybrid bionic people, basically. So anyway, the trick, though, with it is what they did is you can only collect it for a certain amount of turns. So once you find it, actually uncover where it is on a map, you might only have 3 turns to get it. So it kind of forces you to move in a certain direction or to kind of take risks to get it and things like that. I'm only maybe 10 missions into the expansion so far, so I haven't seen some of the advanced stuff, but it looks like you can build things like, you can actually build like mechs and stuff like that, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I played a little bit of Enemy Within, and I'm really digging the sort of psionics, cybernetics thing that they've implemented, and the new enemies, the new maps. I haven't played it since I burned out on it last year, or I guess the year before, but really loving the expansion on that. And I mean, it's only like 15, 20 bucks or something.
Yeah, I think it's 20
just
bucks.
Reinvigorates one of the best games of the previous generation there. So really happy to be doing that. I don't think you guys have died yet in my campaign, which is nice. So
nice.
That's woo. Good.
And I went and tried playing Enemy Within on Iron Man and on classical Iron Man, and I was having a lot of trouble.
Geez.
So I had to take it off. I'm still playing on classic, but I had to take it off Iron Man just because I was getting some really bad party wipes. And if you get off to a bad start, you have to restart again. So I like restarted like 4 or 5 times. I was like, okay, who am I kidding? I just want to see the content in this, and then I can challenge myself later. So, I took it off Iron Man, and I'm not a person. I try and test myself. I'm not going to restart after a bad turn, but if it's like some dumb dice roll that doesn't work out, I'm going to reload the mission and then just start from the start and try to go through. So
enemy tosses grenade and it crits and everybody dies.
Yeah, just really bad. And that happens. I don't mind when that happens and when it's fair, but like some of the stuff is just ridiculous.
The worst is like the random panics and your guy ends up shooting his own dude that's standing next to him.
What are you doing?
Like, come on.
The other thing about Enemy Within is they have some really awesome modifiers that I turned, I think, all of them on. One of them is randomized skill sets. So your guys just get random skills from any class, which is really cool. And I really enjoy playing with that. And then another one was, I think it's like Damage Roulette, it's called, and it basically widens the spectrum for the amount of damage a certain weapon can do. And so you can do really little, or you can do a lot, and everything in between. So, dude, let's talk about, let's get into some mech talk here. Hawken, that hit Steam, Nick.
Yeah.
Did you play this when it came out? I know we've gone through a couple E3s and stuff.
Yeah,
but
I played a real little bit of it, but I never really hooked it, you know, got hooked on it. But I don't know. I guess it hit Steam. And I was like, I might as well play a little bit more of it. Plus, they added the co-op mode to it now.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, there's you defend mechs, basically a horde mode, and it's actually really, really good.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to install that right after this podcast. I didn't know they added that.
Yeah. I mean,
no, it's a little bit different because it's not necessarily against other mechs. Like it spawns different kind of guys. There's a little, like these little flyer guys that come out. There's different sizes of the enemy mechs as well. And then there's a boss wave every, like, is it every 5 waves?
Yeah.
And then I think there's 15 waves per match. And there's 2 or 3 maps available for it. But you actually, the XP you earn in it, you get to keep and apply to your pilot or whatever and stuff. So it's not like you're doing it for nothing. And it can kind of help you out in the game's competitive mode then too. So
yeah, cause
so
you can...
I'm going to call it right now. This is what we should stream next week is co-op Hawken.
Sure.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Because the Titanfall beta will be over by then, and we'll be wanting some mech action.
And I mean, that game's polished to hell. Like, they've got a ton of mechs, a ton of different items and loadouts, and you can really customize different items and different things. If you want a sniper with a high fire rate, you can do that. Or if you want cloaking and stealth and that sort of thing, it's pretty cool, and the different classes really work well together. And it's just solid combat. And, I mean, it is so fast-paced that it could just be considered a first-person shooter, but they have the physics down where you feel like if you're in a big mech, you are lumbering, and your steps have weight to it, your movement has inertia to it, which is really, really a key, I think, to get that feeling, because you can predict where people are going and predict where your mech is going, and there's a real art and skill to manipulating and driving around your mech. It's not just like you can just whip around and do a 360 no scope with this, you know, giant mech. So
yeah,
I'm digging it. I'm gonna play more of it after Titanfall beta wraps up here, because finally I think it's a really lame excuse, but it's having it on Steam will make me play it. I'll just put it at that, because and I think a lot of other people too.
I feel exactly the same way.
It's just I have a ton of games everywhere, but I mean, centralized on Steam, that's just where I go for my stuff. Yeah, Hawken, it's fast-paced, it's good, it's an awesome mech game. Let's churn things over. Who has been playing? Has everyone been playing Titanfall?
Nope.
Nope, not Jason.
I think the three of us have, yeah. And Jason is someone who doesn't like fun.
Right.
I utterly, utterly dislike it.
why do you dislike it?
Because what good does it serve? If you're having fun, you're not being productive in society.
Right. That's right. That's right.
And that's why the three of us are playing Trine, and Jason is off
playing Warframe.
Doing his thing.
Titanfall. Nick, give me your first impressions of Titanfall.
I think it's got this... I told Mike this when we were talking about it. It has this Unreal Tournament vibe to it. Like, it's... you know, more arcadey, and, you know, a lot of people right away wanted to compare it to Call of Duty just because of the, you know, created and stuff. And there's a little bit of that going on, but it's just all action. It's quick respawns. There's very little penalty for deaths. You know, and obviously the big thing is being able to drop the Titan in and then do stuff with it. Whether it's get in it, or if you're in one of the objective maps, you can have it guard a
guard,
a point for you, which adds some pretty neat things. Like I've been enjoying being like a sniper sort of class, and then cloaking, and then sending my Titan to guard an area and watching other people kind of come in and try and get it, and then just pick them off as they go up to them or whatever.
The old bait and switch strategy with the Titan. I like it.
I think the one thing that Titanfall does that I wish other mech games had, like Hawk, and even when I would jump back and forth between, I kept trying to do things. One, I like the quick jets to go, you know, to like strafe.
Dude, the locomotion in that game is unreal. That's not a pun. It is unreal. The double jump. It's like what Brink tried to do.
Yeah,
it is like what they wanted to do.
That's
with
a good
Brink.
That's a good analogy. But
being able to double jump and run along walls.
The Titan punch in Titanfall, when you end up having like three or four or five people and they're all fighting and shooting, and you start seeing everyone go to reload, and you're like, well, screw this, and you just run at it, and you just start seeing like the Titan punching, and it's like Rock'em Sock'em Robots or something, and it's pretty satisfying, especially when you end up grabbing the pilot out of the other Titan, and so
shaking him like a baby. Mike, give me a taste of what you're feeling with the Titanfall here.
You guys have said a lot of what I wanted to say. The fluidity of the action, the fact that the game runs at a just silky smooth frame rate. It's really responsive. A lot of times, if I'm running around in a first-person shooter, and Battlefield is a lot like this, where I feel like like a firefight gets too frantic, I end up being able to get like disoriented and not, you know, make it through an area that I should normally be able to.
Yeah.
And there's just something about the combination of way that the characters move and the actual layouts of the levels themselves, where everything feels, it's weird. I played my first round of Titanfall and I felt immediately comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't feel like there was a learning curve. I'd felt like, okay, this is basically, it is a little reductive, but this is Call of Duty with a bunch of interesting stuff bolted onto it. You know, it's got that, like, they mastered, multiplayer shooter with Call of Duty 4, and that had just been iterated on forever, and they just said, okay, well, what if we keep that base level of gameplay, and then we let everyone start running on the fucking walls and double jumping and give them giant robots, because that's cool. And the Titan is, you know, like, Call of Duty has the kill spree stuff or the death spree things where you have to achieve a certain amount of success or in later games failure in order to get something cool to happen. And the fact that the Titan is something that just everyone has at, what is it, 2.5 minutes until you get your Titan, no matter what. And then if you kill another player or grunts on the map, your counter goes down.
Yeah.
So, if you are annihilating the other team single-handedly, you get your Titan quickly, but everyone is eventually going to get that Titan.
Yeah.
So you have to, and the great thing is if you let that Titan, the countdown expire, but don't summon your Titan, and then you die, you can just drop straight in the Titan.
What up, bitches?
It's true. That is really freaking cool. I immediately liked it, and you know, I don't have, like, multiplayer shooters don't generally stick with me. Like, I'll have some that I go back to and play, but I'll play until everyone is too good and cares enough that it doesn't matter. But I feel like Titanfall does a few things that might keep me coming back to check in on it more often. Like, just the fact that they have a noob pistol.
New pistol,
like,
is,
okay,
dude. New pistol is legit.
So they have a pistol that, you know, you paint a target and it locks on Panzer Dragoon style, and you just pull the trigger once and it fires like six bullets out and kills whatever you shoot at. So, you know, like, everyone bragging about no scope, and it's like, well, I just noob pistoled you. So what now?
What are you gonna do?
But they like I saw someone on Twitter refer to it as, like, it's Call of Duty for people who suck at first-person shooters.
Great.
And that's not really a bad... Like, that's... It's a game... It's a competitive game that has a level of play that is going to... Like, there's going to be meta game and all that stuff that you get in esports titles. But I don't think that it's going to get to the point where the difficulty curve is impossible for someone to just drop in and check it out.
I think it's important. They're doing a couple of important things. They have the grunts running around. So of your squad of five or six, I think. Can't remember.
Six on six.
Yeah. 6-on-6, which is a beautiful number. Beautiful number for a shooter. Especially for the size of the maps. They have, you know, NPCs and grunts running around that you kill, and you're like, oh, and even though that is an AI and they suck compared to a human, you feel good that you are contributing in some way.
Yep.
And I think that's important because, you know, as we get older, we are slower, you know, and I know reaction time isn't, at the level we play, it doesn't really matter, but you're like, I find that I go in and I'm like, I can't aim as fast, but I can outthink this little kid, that sort of thing. That's where I think that Titanfall is making up some ground. I mean, you don't have to, it's not going to be a Twitch shooter at the level I'm playing, but I mean, if there's six coordinated people, I think even when you call in mechs and the timing of when you call in mechs, I think that's going to balance out, rather than just, you know, going up against people that can just No scope.
There are some cool things too. Like, at first I didn't understand the whole grunts thing. Like, it just seemed like a distraction, especially they do some pretty stupid stuff, the AI.
Oh yeah. They're kind of dumb.
They really kind of get in the way sometimes, and there's actually some scripted events in certain areas where the grunts will be fighting it out. And you'll always walk in on them doing the same thing. But there are some pretty neat things. Like, I don't know if you guys know, but you can hack the specters. And then they'll guard you. You can actually have a crew of, like, these specters following you around and being, like, little bodyguards for you.
That's kind of neat.
Which is pretty neat. So basically, you just have to run up behind them, and you hold E for a few seconds, and you jam this little hacking tool in their head. And
nice.
Yeah, because there was in the tutorial, they actually have this whole animation where you hack a computer.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, when does this happen in the actual game? So it's good to know about that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I mean, a couple other things just quick. I find the verticality of the maps is really nice, especially with, like we said, the jumping and locomotion. They have, of course, the carrot on the stick there, which came in Call of Duty 4 and sort of revolutionized those RPG elements and having the, you know, always going toward, you're always working towards something no matter what. I really like the look of the game. I think it's pretty beautiful. It's got color. It's not quite just gray and brown. It's got some color there. There is some greenery. I mean, you're mostly in cities and stuff like that, but there is some other sort of forest areas, which I think was cool. There's some real density to it. There, if you go in a house, there's a lot of things in there, you know, windows and perches and furniture and stuff you can hide behind. So a lot of the detail they looked at, and I think that was really good. And I'm looking forward to playing more of it. And I'm kind of over shooting dudes, just because there's other stuff I want to be playing. But this makes me want to shoot dudes, especially in a giant mech. So.
Does anybody know what engine the game uses?
Source.
I thought I heard someone say it runs on the Source engine,
awesome.
Which just blew my mind.
That's amazing.
So is there anything aside, like, you know, team v team, sure, but is there anything non-competitive about the game that's strictly co-op?
Not at this point. I would definitely say that.
The campaign is still multiplayer.
Yeah.
Like the campaign is literally, like... We called Brink co-op, and, you know, in hindsight, I'm not so sure. Like, the only way you could really consider it co-op is if the other team didn't get populated,
right?
At all,
right?
But the campaign wouldn't. I haven't played any of the campaign, but as far as I understand, it works in much the same way, where there is an objective to the map, and a story plays out with different beats, but depending on who wins. Different phases of the map, it plays out differently.
I didn't even know there's a campaign. I thought they scrapped it.
Well, there is both a
it's
Brink-like. There's story-based multiplayer.
Sure.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah, it's fun. I mean, when's that beta over? I think it's open for PC 19th. Now. 19th. Yeah. So a couple days. Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, I think they got my money. I think they got my money, guys. Couple other things before we go into news. Mike, let's talk WildStar.
Let's.
What's going on with the old MMO stuff?
Well, you know, it is an MMO-ass MMO, that's for sure.
This is correct. Tally did do a wonderful write-up on the site. You can go read that in some... There's some great detail in there. Mike and I, we played a little bit. We can give you our thoughts. Yeah.
I've played to, like... I think I've played more than Tally at this point.
Nice.
Gauging on level. I don't know how many characters she has, though. It is... I'll try and keep it short. It's Carbine, the studio who made it, is made up of a bunch of people who splintered off from Blizzard after WoW released. And you can really tell that these are Blizzard people making the game because it's an MMO, so it's going to immediately draw comparisons to WoW. But considering these people also made WoW, it really feels like it has the ease of playability that WoW does that a lot of MMOs don't. Almost everything is instantly accessible.
Yeah.
It's got like a really gorgeous art style. It's got low poly. You know, the environments and characters are all relatively low poly, but the strength of the art makes it not matter at all. But the cool thing I really like about WildStar is that it's basically a space western, like
Wild Arms. That's what it reminds
me
of.
It's like they watched, you know, it's like they all watched Firefly and said, you know what, that's pretty sweet.
Let's do that,
and let's make an MMO about that. But it has the thing I really like about it that keeps me playing it is the combat. There's a lot of MMOs have the concept of an auto attack. I initiate an attack on an enemy, and I just I take my hands off the controls, and my dude will just start beating on them without using special abilities, and then it'll eventually die. WildStar doesn't have that, and it also has active dodging, so you can like double tap to combat roll out of the way of enemy attacks, and so you'll be, you know, hammering in your like your ability rotation, but they've done some interesting things where you'll hit an ability and then the ability will have like a second key press that alters the effect, or some of them actually it'll go from a tap to a double tap, and then some abilities you actually hold down to activate different effects. So it has this rhythm to the combat that feels really, really nice.
Yeah, you're always engaged. You're always engaged with combat.
And it does the zone phasing thing that solves, you know, it's a kind of a solved problem in MMOs that I go through this zone and I complete all these quests and I log back in 15 minutes later and everything's reverted. You know, once you've affected change in a zone, the zone stays altered for you forever. And they do that in a pretty intelligent way. Everybody, like, no matter which race or, you know, no matter which side of the conflict you pick, like, all of the alliances, like, all the allied races start in the same zone, so you don't have the, you know,
I'm a troll, meet up.
We need to find a place to meet up after the start zone. You can everybody starts in the same place, so that's pretty cool. They've done a lot of smart stuff with grouping and guilds, and they have public quests, and yes, there is a lot of content based on going and killing 10 rats.
Space rats.
But one of the cool things they did is, so you have like your character class, but then there's a path system, so you can be a soldier
or
archaeologist or a scientist. I think that those are the three.
I was trying to build things to help the society. It's called pilgrimage or something. Pilgrimer.
Yeah, so basically you'll have the quests that are available to everybody, and then you'll have a separate series of missions that you can only take on if you've taken that specific path. So I made a guy go down the soldier path, and you'll get things like you'll have to go do like wave defense on on an objective, and all that stuff comes up organically as you explore.
That's really cool.
It's pretty slick. I think they're onto something. I thought the last time I played an MMO that stuck with me, it was Guild Wars 2.
Still stuck with
and
me.
I really liked that, but they're like WildStar just feels more like the game I want to play.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Well, because Guild Wars 2 has a problem where I feel like the way they scale power in Guild Wars 2, like you never really feel like you are a supreme badass because you can never gain an enormous advantage over the environment or the dungeons. You are simply, it's always a test of skill, and like I like that in like group content, but if I'm just running around by myself, I sometimes just want to go
smite fools.
just kill people in two shots and be done and just move on with my day.
Yeah.
And Guild Wars 2, no matter what your gear is, like if you hang out in a zone, it scales you down to be as powerful as that zone. And it's just hard to want to go exploring if you know that the world is always going to be the same difficulty level. It's like an Elder Scrolls game. It's like, I don't want the enemies to all level with me. I don't want that bandit to suddenly be wearing glass armor and have magic weapons.
Yeah, I mean...
Anyway.
I played a little bit. I got to, like... I think I'm, like, level 8 now. And I made a warrior. He's a big rock dude. Really cool.
Does he have a plant mustache? Because those are pretty awesome.
I think I just gave him a nice big jaw with a big beard. Nice. I was going for, like, this very staunch... staunch-like warrior, and he is a peaceful giant because he is... My path is, again... Yeah, I think I was I'm not an archaeologist, but I, like, collect items from around the area, and I bring them to a location, an encampment, and then I can build, like, an entertainment center that gives a buff, or I can, like, build this teleportation device that helps people, or, you know, a weapon sharpener, so... the path thing is pretty cool. I really like the look of the game. It's super cartoony, but it works really well. Like, it looks really good. And, it's taken some cool things from different areas and different MMOs. So, I'm going to keep playing it. I think you can play up to level 15 before the NDA stops or something. I have to double check. But I'm going to be doing a couple videos on that for the site, maybe do a races and classes video and then some general gameplay stuff. I think this is something to pay attention to because it was, you know, people talked about for a while and then it kind of went under the radar, and I think now it's, you know, time.
I think it's probably coming out this year.
Yeah, time to ramp it up.
The other thing I forgot to mention that I really like about it is it uses EVE Online's subscription model.
Oh, what is that? Inform me.
So you can pay your $15 a month, or you can... There's an in-game currency that everyone can earn and sell to each other that can also be exchanged for game time.
Okay.
So,
okay. Cool.
You know, it is... Like, you can pay for... Like, you could buy the... Because there'll be a boxed copy of it, I guess. You can buy the game, play during your free month, and earn enough the in-game currency to just start buying...
time.
Yeah, and they have a big cute flow chart on their website that explains it better than I can.
Nice. Okay, last game, Jason, what's happening in the world of Warframe?
Slicing up more dudes as space ninjas.
There was a big patch, content patch came out.
Yeah, for PC only. The
of course, why wouldn't you?
4, I think, is coming this week. I think it's supposed to
be PC Master Race.
Nice.
And the PC patch, I mean, basically it adds a new Warframe called the Zephyr that is very different from the other ones. Like, she has abilities to dash, like, jump up high and dash, kind of like do an air dash thing, and then can...
Tell me more.
Zip down into the ground.
Like a Zephyr Falcon?
Can summon tornadoes that she can also then shoot with, like, the different elements in the game, so they become, like, element-based tornadoes that kind of spin through enemies. Seems really cool.
How many space bucks does she cost?
I'm sure, like, if you want a buyer, it's 300. It will be like 300 or 375, which is about $20 usually, I think. Oof.
Free to play, baby. Free to play.
Free to play. Absolutely. You don't, you, yeah, if you don't want to do that, then all you have to do
sweat
is builder in the dojo, in the clan dojo.
And the 15 weeks it takes to get all the currency to do that, well...
We just got to contribute, man. We got to hire those bots, and we got to hire them to farm us some Warframe space bucks. All right.
Pretty much.
Nick's dying over there, guys. We got to get him talking about news. He's excited to talk about Disney Infinity and all the money he's spending on it for him and his daughter, or maybe just him. Who knows? Tell me. Give me
quick. I got a problem.
And he left.
So we've got a magical sorcerer Mickey there. That set you back $13 or some.
Yeah. So I guess Disney Infinity, despite the tepid reviews, has sold like $50 million. And that's not an exaggeration. It sold $50 million. It shouldn't really be that much of a surprise. I mean, the game is relying on franchising and marketing its franchises. So,
of course.
Basically, what they've been doing is releasing packs of figures every, like, 3 months, maybe? Maybe a little less, every 2 months. The newest one's coming out in March. You've got like Frozen figures, and I believe there's some Toy Story ones, and then the Sorcerer's Apprentice that I just showed is coming out as well. And
that Frozen set's making them buku bucks, because that movie is still doing good.
It's gonna make them huge money. So yeah, like I said, we were kind of tepid on the game. It's obvious that they're really trying to milk it for all it's worth, and the accounting books are showing it's working. So expect it to keep on milking.
Newsflash: Disney Corporation makes lots of money.
Oh geez, Dying Light, that's a thing. Mike, tell me about the new trailer.
It's. You know, Dying Light obviously is Dead Island with parkour, so, you know, Mirror's Edge with zombies. I'm not going to be reductive, but it is basically Dead Island with more, with a lot more traversal than simple, you know, whacking people with a cricket bat. The new trailer did the tired trope of saying, yo, there's people and they've lost their humanity trying to survive, and what kind of monsters are we when we are now becoming the monsters, or
who is
some
the
such
monster?
BS.
Yeah.
And you know, it a game looks I didn't play any of the Dead Island games. I actually have a copy of Dead Island 1 for the PC, and I just have not played it yet, thanks to glorious Steam sale at one point. but it's, you know, it still looks really good. It's, you know, it's just a bunch of modeling, you know, existential questions overlaid over a piano track. And then
what makes a good trailer
at the end that says pre-order this game and get a special You Are the Zombie mode. And I'm really, frankly, I'm sick of games being like, yo, you don't get to have this thing unless you pre-order it. And I get that they have a bottom line, but your mode can't be that good if you're going to willingly put it out there so that most of the people that buy your game don't get it. So yeah. It doesn't seem like it's an enticing mode to me, and it just irritates me. The game does look super cool, and I sound like I'm coming down on it, but I really do think it looks fun. I would like to give it a shot, especially since I like, you know, since first-person parkour is all the rage now with Titanfall and Mirror's Edge coming back eventually at some point, maybe.
I remember when Nick and I sat down for this demo at E3, and they had an interesting sort of mode. I can't remember what it was, but like it was like pseudo infrared. Do you remember what that was, Nick? I can't remember, but like, stuff would pop up, and I don't know if it was because the person was infected or if they were playing as the zombie, but like,
yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what they're doing with this, because Dead Island, I was lukewarm on Dead Island. I think they're fun games, but they're not great. But I would like to see a more polished one, more refined version. So if that's what Dying Light is, that's awesome. Another trailer, another co-op shooter here. Evolve, Jason, did you get a chance to see the big monster in action? And I'm not talking about your bedroom, but...
Funny enough, I have the same soundtrack in the bedroom.
Oh, good, yeah. That's what I figured.
Yeah. Man, I could just watch that trailer over and over again for the nice cover that they have. I enjoyed Taylor's post about that for the different class types that you have. You have Handlebar Mustache Man. Clearly the brains of the operation compared
clearly.
To Guy from Duck Dynasty or Cyborg from Justice League, and Beret Sniper Girl, who kind of remind me of StarCraft.
Oh,
Ghost.
Man, I love Beret.
Token
love...
female character.
Yeah, Beret Sniper class is amazing. Beret Sniper has to be, you gotta be nerfed. Gotta nerf Beret Sniper class.
That's just new job class Beret Sniper.
I just love how there's like all these beefy mother flipping men, yeah. And then they picked like, okay, well, we have to have the girl character, so let's give her tits and an ass and a fucking beret.
Yeah,
so and she's the like, sniper. And
look, it's like just give me like in a game like that, just go ahead and give me Vasquez.
Sure. The female character from Loadout. I forget her name, but I don't know if you've seen it.
Maybe
Bertha.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I don't think I've seen any female characters in Loadout.
Yeah. Well, go watch some YouTube videos and you'll see what's going on.
She was a thing of nightmares.
Oh, jeez.
But Evolve, I mean, like, you know, it's just a trailer at this point in the not actual footage, CGI, but shows, you know, the gist of the game. Four people go into a jungle with some guns and shoot up the local wildlife until they piss off something that's bigger than them, and then they have to work together, I guess, to kill it and take it down.
Do it now! Do it!
That's right.
Yeah. Well, no, Evolve looks sweet. I want to see more and more every day from that. Really curious to see, yeah, the modes. I mean, the sort of four-on-one. But yeah, just, again, I'm getting hints of Left 4 Dead. Little tastes.
Just, I mean, it is. It's Left 4 Dead's, what was that called? I can't remember the name of the mode, but where is the team versus the team?
I don't remember either.
Versus.
It's been so long.
Versus.
Was it just Versus? I thought
Was it just versus? Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, like, you know, Left 4 Dead versus. Well, since it's the same team, it should make sense, right? I also like the trailer how the sniper, Beret Sniper Girl, like, they shoot, like, they fire off however many rounds in the jungle, this little creature falls down, she just kind of pats the dude on the arm like, good job, way to go.
Yeah, good work.
Nice touch.
All right. And again, like I said, give the old Wildstar MMO co-opportunities article a shot. Again, a couple things Mike and I missed in terms of grouping up. They have a cool system that's aside from guilds called Circles. You can have multiple.
It's Google Plus,
which is great. You can have different friend groups like that. They have a mentoring system, which I think is great because a mentor earns experience for helping other people. I think that's interesting for an MMO. We're going to be churning out some more content for that. So just stay posted. I won't go into too much more detail because we're running a bit long here. Was there any topics, quick stuff you guys wanted to go through? I know the three of us have been playing through Trine 2, which is the most beautiful damn game I've ever played.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
It is a storybook, and just it's fun. And I've had a lot of fun playing as the single class, not switching at all. I'm playing as the motherfucking sorcerer. Mike is the... the deft rogue and get shit done.
I finish the puzzles and go and get like a drink while you guys try and figure out how to get to where I managed to get.
And Nick gets to be the big fat stupid knight that just beats everything up. So
the I'm too fat to stand on the wizard's surfboard without breaking it.
And I mean that is I would not want to play that game by myself. And that's that is not a knock against that game, but I have had just so much fun playing that and role-playing it and doing that. I think it's great. So well, I would like to find, more games that we can do that with and just have a nice little playthrough of them. And perfect length, because I think we've done three play sessions between an hour and two each, and then we're close.
We appear to be towards the end of the game.
Like sub 10-hour games, I'm all for this style. So bring it on. I mean, all those videos, Nick, we've got them. We stream them, obviously, but now we're putting those also on the YouTube channel.
And yeah.
It's a nice way to go through that. We say tons of funny shit the whole time, so
go check
those out. We had a question, actually, from the Q&A list here. From Mutant 1988, I'm selecting the question, and here it is. It says, "Good morning, fellows. Must be in a different time zone, but I hope you guys are planning to pick up the best co-op game to be released this year, Earth Defense Force 2025. Can anyone speak to this?"
I know that someone on the site is, but I'm not. I don't know if
we don't know yet.
Taylor's going to be doing the review for that, so definitely going to be checking it out.
Those don't come to PC, do they?
They do. One of them, eventually. I think the last one did.
Did it?
What was it, the EDF, the remake, I think, came to
EDF.
PC.
EDF.
I'm pulling up the...
I don't know.
I think 2017 came to Steam. I seem to remember it being there.
Quick, oh, you are. Yes, you
Insect
are.
Insect Armageddon. Yeah. Steam.
Yep. Good call.
So hopefully we'll check it out on PC.
Yeah. Hopefully this one does.
My 360 is in my closet.
Yeah, hopefully this one comes to PC. It's not announced yet, but I wouldn't be surprised. The other one wasn't announced either. I seem to remember just like 2 weeks before, like, oh yeah, we're bringing this to Steam. So. Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff happening on screen, so I would like to have a video card for that. So. I mean, EDF, it's just pure fun. Like, that is a game-ass video game. So, that's all I got. Should we get that surprise voicemail, guys? Because I wasn't joking around here.
Let me switch the audio stuff here, and we'll play this.
All right,
and
all right.
See
Nick,
how this
Nick
works.
Has to do
this. Give me the thumbs up if you guys can hear it, because I can't when it plays.
All right, switching audio.
Doing it now.
Radio Magic.
Hey guys, this is Rory from Philadelphia. I have a question about Xbox Live. So it seems like, you know, Xbox Live in the beginning was such a great service, but now PlayStation Plus has really surpassed it. You know, coming out, there's all these great free games coming out on PlayStation 4. And Xbox 360 are now getting good sales, and there's nothing for Xbox One. Is Xbox Live on Xbox One worth it? I mean, they have all these potential games. I mean, I know there's not much on there, but they could at least have something on sale. You know, that Spartan Assault could have been on sale for gold members, or Peggle could have been on sale, or, you know, Tomb Raider just came out and it's a full $60. You know, that, why couldn't have been on sale for gold members? You know, I have a PlayStation 3, and I have a PlayStation 4, but I'm thinking about getting a PlayStation 4 and getting PlayStation Plus, because it just seems like there's just a wealth of games and new content coming out. Like, Outlast comes out next month for free. I mean,
all right, so we have the sort of juxtaposition between Xbox Live, Gold, and PlayStation Plus. Has really had a shift in the last 12 months with PlayStation Plus just firing on all cylinders. Free games, free content, lots of great deals, and Xbox Live just sort of still maintaining and existing, giving you access to Netflix. So I can only speak to the PlayStation Plus side of things, and I have purchased like one or two Vita games, and the rest have been PlayStation Plus downloads for free, and it's been glorious. It's been awesome, and I love it. And being able to play things like that I've had on my mind, and you're like, oh crap, there's Dragon's Dogma that I can play for free now, and it's, you know, download it, play it, and if you don't like it, it's no sweat off your back. But if you do like it, you can pour a bunch of hours into it while you have that subscription. And I think it's just a smart way to get people integrated in the ecosystem. That is really what it's all about. That's why Steam succeeds so well. They get people integrated into their ecosystem, and PlayStation Plus is doing that. Not quite at the same level, but it's getting there. So, I'm digging PS Plus. I'm going to resubscribe when my year is up for sure. And, can you guys, I don't have my X-Bone yet or my PS4 yet. So, if you want to speak to those things and how they are, the subscriptions are doing on the current consoles.
I have both, and neither one right now in terms of what you're getting for your subscription thing, there's not much happening. So, I mean, the PS4, there's been two free games, Outlast and Resogun at launch. So, you know, there's not too much stuff going on there. You can still get some discounts on some things and stuff like that.
They had a few other games too. Since, like, what was that? The Shadow game or whatever that you played.
Contrast.
Yeah. There was a couple of like the indie games I think they put out there for free too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe there's a few that I missed the Don't Starve was the other one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Game of the year.
I'll tell you what. Right now, the new gen or the current gen consoles are too new to make a really good judgment on this.
Yep.
But if you compare live on the 360 to live on PlayStation 3 at this point, it's not even a contest. Sony was tired of, you know, like Xbox Live was a much better service than PlayStation Network for almost the entire generation.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sony came and they instituted the PS Plus and the Instant Game Collection and giving people discounts for their subscription. And the number of games that I have actually been leaning towards PlayStation buying on the last gen stuff, I really did pack my 360 up because if there was stuff that I had missed that I was gonna play, eventually almost all of it showed up on PlayStation Plus for free, like Space Marine, it's like Saints Row 3 ended up there.
Yep.
Payday 2, obviously Dragon's Dogma, which, you know, I still feel is criminally underrated and more people should have played. The discounts is really what does it for me, because games are really expensive, and, you know, if I pay the $40 or $50 per year on PlayStation Plus, I can save $40 or $50, you know, within almost instantly with the Instant Game Collection, because I'll download a game and be like, well, I was interested in this when it came out, I wasn't sure on it, so I didn't buy it, and I didn't waste my money, but I just got to play it for free, so you almost instantly get that money back, because otherwise you would have had to rent it or buy it or something. But the regular sales, like, they just had a Final Fantasy sale a couple weeks ago, where all the PSN Final Fantasy games were on sale. And if you were PlayStation Plus, you could get Final Fantasy 14 for like $16 instead of $30. Nice. So it was really, it's really eye-opening. I feel that as far as the two services are combined, that is the one that actually makes it worth it, because I don't need to, you know, on my Xbox, I would need to pay for Live in order to use Netflix. And on PlayStation, I'm paying for PlayStation Plus to do game stuff.
Yeah.
But all of the other services don't require...
To be fair, Microsoft is starting to do similar stuff, giving away, you know, games and things like that. And the one difference, too, with the Microsoft one, they're doing a really poor job of promoting, is the free games you get with them... you keep regardless of your subscription level. You don't have to stay a gold member to have access to those, where the PlayStation Plus stuff, if you do decide to stop paying, you won't be able to access that stuff again. So that's the one differentiating factor. But the problem Microsoft's having now is all their stuff is 2, 3, even 4 years old that they're giving away. And that value isn't
Sony,
as much.
Sony
as,
just gave away BioShock Infinite for free on PlayStation Plus.
You're talking like a 6-month lead time for PlayStation Plus versus a 2-3 year lead time for Xbox Live Gold Instant or whatever the hell they're called.
And the Xbox Live stuff that they'd been giving out for free, not only was it old, but it was old stuff that sold a million copies.
It was, yeah.
And PlayStation Plus seems to lean towards this is kind of a middle. Yeah. Like every now and then they'll get a really popular game, but a lot of the games that they've been putting up there are like B tier or word of mouth games. Again, Dragon's Dogma, that was a free game. It's like
that's an important game.
I'm one of the few people I know who actually bought that.
I got two copies, buddy. I got two copies.
Sweet.
I feel like this is a Subway ad stuck in the middle of one of those TV shows that
we
you
really
watch.
Just play Dragon's
I just
Dogma.
Eat Subway.
Just play Dragon. If you take anything away from this discussion, play Dragon's Dogma, you fiends. So, that's good. I'm glad. More voicemails, please. Look how excited you got these gentlemen sitting beside me. They're sweaty. They are just relentless.
Out of breath.
And I, contrary to popular belief, I think they look better wet. So, let's wrap things up. I mean,
that just got awkward, Locke.
No, we're good here, man. We're good. If you have a friend over and you're like, shit, man, I don't know what to play, download the Co-Optimus app. There's a handy little thing that can tell you what style of game, how many people, where, when. You can get that on any mobile device, Windows, phone, something, X, iOS, Android. They've programmed it all, you guys.
And after you get the app, go buy Dragon's Dogma, the official game.
I'm just going to update the app, and please, the only thing it's going to do is say Dragon's Dogma when you launch it.
my Xbox Live name is Fairbear, and you can use any of my pawns. Yes. Please, level them up.
Pawn face, Mike named them. go ahead and leave us some feedback. It takes literally 2.5 minutes to type like a paragraph on iTunes saying how cool you thought this episode was, or the podcast in general, and how sick our beards look. Watch it live. We have such good facial hair. finally, Twitter is where everything goes when we write something, when we talk about something cool. At Co-Optimus, you can follow it there. As always, Cheat Code Hotline is here. Mike, you got something for me? We got some top tips. Give me something tasty. Come on. Let's go.
All right.
Give them a reason to call in.
We are going to go with the special powered-up password for Who Framed Roger Rabbit
NES. That game is hard as hell. Give me something.
It is a password. It is LLHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHB.
Oh, 3B.
Wait. How many H's before the 3B? Now I'm lost.
There's like 12.
All I know is that Roger can prove he's innocent if he can find Maroon's will, but it has turned up missing. You can spend up a lot of time.
Spoilers!
Clues, or you can go straight to the end of the game using the password.
And when Christopher Lloyd killed his parents, he looked just like Bob Costas with pink eye.
That's exactly right. Those googly eyes coming out of his head.
And check it. Just check out this awesome 80s illustration.
Wow. Dude.
And really.
Backwards
that's
hat.
That's freaking amazing.
I love that. Index Cheat Code Hotline. Thank you so much, Mike. If you want to be featured on the show, you can leave us a voicemail, just like you heard here today. Please, don't make us wait another 3 years. The number you can dial using your rotary telephone, 646-926-6748. We would love to hear from you because we had a lot of fun with that one. That was actually an awesome question, so thank you again for sending that in. I thought that was good. It was a nice morsel.
Indeed, kudos. Thank you for listening and actually calling.
Yeah. Other than that, any closing remarks from the Peanut Gallery?
Nope.
All right. Well,
more Ovaltine.
Buy more Ovaltine.
A Subway sub. I like to game
and play Dragon's Dogma. So that has been Co-Optimus episode 120.
There we go.
And
Dragon's Dogma.
There you go. That's the
game.
Game of the
generation.
Shit. Ha ha ha.